Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sex Addiction, The Partner's Perspective, a comprehensive guide to understanding and surviving sex addiction for partners and those who want to help them, by Paula Hall. Narrated by Holly Adams. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to visual materials present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Introduction. This book is long overdue, and I'd like to start by apologizing to all the partners and professionals who have patiently and impatiently waited for it. When I wrote Understanding and Treating Sex Addiction 2 years ago, I had hoped to write a whole section for partners, but quickly discovered there was no room, and partners needed and deserved a book dedicated to them. This book has taken many months to write, during which time I have worked with a growing number of partners, both individually and within groups, and have conducted a survey of 125 partners, all of whom have generously shared their experiences and their journeys. I hope that, like me, you will learn from their wisdom and insight as you listen. The first lesson that I learned was that discovering your partner has sex or pornography addiction is traumatic in a way that few have experienced and even less understand. Well-meaning friends and professionals may try to offer help and consolation, but it is often only through sharing with other partners that any sense of authentic identification can be found. Partners find themselves in freefall, as the world they previously knew is ripped from under them, and many fear they will never find solid ground again. Mindfulness guru Jon Kabat-Zinn said, "You can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf." And it is my hope that, through this book, partners will learn how to keep their head above water and ride the destructive emotional waves that threaten to engulf their lives, and that therapists will become more proficient surf instructors. Part 1 focuses on the reality of sex addiction. Some people still doubt the existence of sex addiction, and many who do accept it do not understand it. The first 3 chapters are devoted to sharing information about what sex addiction is and why it hurts partners so much. Through these chapters, I hope you will learn that sex addiction is not about sex, wanting too much, or not being happy with what you have, but about a compulsive behavior that meets deeper psychological needs and a condition that changes the structure of the brain, leaving rational decision-making and the genuine love and devotion to partners a distant memory. In Part 2, the focus shifts specifically to the needs of partners, and, using SURF as our acrostic, partners will learn how to survive the trauma, understand their reactions, reclaim self-identity, and face the future. There is also a chapter exploring the controversial topic of codependency, which continues to confuse, damage, and insult many already traumatized partners. Part 3 is about the couple relationship, and starts with some food for thought for partners to digest as they consider the future of their relationship. The following chapters go on to explore in depth what is required to heal relationships broken by sex addiction, including how to improve communication, rebuild trust, and reclaim sex and sexuality. You will also find information and guidance on the importance of therapeutic disclosure, which is an essential but often underutilized tool in partner recovery. Much of this book has been written from a female heterosexual perspective, as this represents most of my clinical experience, but sex addiction affects male partners too, as well as gay and lesbian couples. There are more similarities than differences between these partner groups, but nonetheless, I wish to acknowledge that some listeners will rightly feel not enough has been said to address their individual needs. I have also failed to escape using the pejorative label of addict, which those who have worked or trained with me know I desperately try to avoid. I do not believe that addiction should define a person, but rather, it is a condition that people have. Hence, I never refer to people with sex addiction as addicts, either when working directly with them or with their partners. but for the purpose of easy listening, I have relented, as referring to partner and person with the addiction became clumsy very quickly. Nonetheless, I maintain that the label of addict is unhelpful for everyone. Finally, I would like to close by dedicating this book to all the partners who have so courageously shared their experience with me, those who have shared their traumatic experiences of personal betrayal and sorrow that so often go beyond words. Sex addiction is the most intimate wound that any partner can be forced to face, and the most brutal attack a relationship can be expected to endure. But partners do survive, and so do many relationships, and it has been a profound privilege to work with the couples who have fought addiction together, as well as the partners who have taken the brave step to move on with life alone. Part 1. Facing the Reality of Sex Addiction. Face reality as it is, not as it was, or as you wish it would be. Jack Welch. In these first three chapters, we explore the reality of sex addiction. Many partners have never heard of sex addiction until it crashes into their lives, and, understandably, most know little about it, and some are skeptical that it really exists. In Chapter 1, we go over the arguments for and against the sex addiction label and the criteria establishing if someone is a sex addict. Chapter 2 is devoted to understanding sex addiction from a biological, psychological, and social perspective. We discuss the different classifications of sex addiction, the most common causes, and the essential treatment strategies. The chapter ends with an explanation of what recovery means and looks like for people struggling with this condition. In Chapter 3, we hear why sex addiction hurts partners so much, and why the misconceptions of friends, family, and misinformed helping professionals can inadvertently make the pain of discovery even worse. 1. Does sex addiction really exist? Most partners do not discover their partner is a sex addict. What they discover is that their partner has been unfaithful. More often than not, partners gradually drag out or unravel the painful reality that the person they most trusted in their life has betrayed them, not once, but repeatedly. The words sex addiction may not enter the vocabulary for many weeks, months, or even years after behaviors have been discovered. And when it is out there on the table, the first reaction of many partners is, "Really?" In the survey of 126 partners that was conducted to accompany this book, 30% had heard of sex addiction before their partner's diagnosis, 25% didn't believe it existed, and 36% thought it was just an excuse. At the time of writing this book, sex addiction is still a controversial topic, and, like many, you may be skeptical about the reality of the condition. In the survey, only 9% believed sex addiction was a real problem when they first heard of their partner's problems, compared with nearly 79% today. Thankfully, public and professional opinions are slowly beginning to change as issues of compulsive porn use become more and more prevalent and other explanations make less and less sense. But nonetheless, doubts and myths still prevail, and for partners of so-called sex addicts, those misunderstandings can have profound emotional effects. Because if sex addiction doesn't really exist, then what does that make their partners? We have alternative words to sex addiction for people who have betrayed their partner multiple times, for those who have breached their partner's trust and deliberately acted in ways that they know would break their heart, for the men and women who seem to be incapable of fidelity, or those who choose to stay up late alone every night to watch porn. These words are mostly negative and abusive ones, though there are still significant gender differences. A man may get away with the euphemistic label of a player, or some might call him a typical bloke, or perhaps simply a bastard. A woman may be called a nymphomaniac, or a sex kitten, or a bitch and a slut. If the behaviors are outside of what is deemed to be normal or commonplace, additional terms such as freak, sado, or even pervert might be applied. All are value judgments about the character of the individual, character traits that are assumed to be the cause of the behavior. Sex addiction offers an alternative explanation to the character assassinations that are often thrown at people whose sexual behavior crosses a partner's or society's boundaries, but for some, it is hard to accept. There are two main reasons for that, which we will now explore. Common objections to sex addiction. Sex addiction is just an excuse for moral failure. At the root of this common objection is the belief that if you're an addict, then you don't have to accept responsibility for the mistakes you've made in the past or the choices you make in the future. That is simply not true. And if it were, it would make treatment a waste of time and money. Addiction is not the opposite of choice. Someone with an addiction has still made choices about their behavior, but those choices have been driven by something much deeper and more powerful than willpower. There is a difference between what motivates addictive behaviors and what motivates selfish, immoral behaviors. But in both cases, ultimately the individual does make a choice. When someone has an addiction, their ability to choose is impacted by the biological and psychological components of their addiction, something we will explore in more depth in the next chapter. But for now, it's important to understand that both the neurochemistry of addiction and the unconscious psychological causes can combine to make choice very difficult indeed. When you add the neurochemical dopamine, the common denominator in all addictions, to the reward-seeking engine of the brain, it's like rocket fuel. Unresolved issues and unmet needs from childhood can render the braking mechanism almost useless. Hence, when it comes to choice and addiction, it's like having the turbo-fueled engine of a rocket and the brakes of a bicycle. However, when someone is able to recognize and resolve the damage to their braking system, and learn practical ways of developing other fuels for their engine, then a far greater degree of choice can be enjoyed. There's no doubt that some people do misuse the addiction label. "It's not my fault I'm an addict," or "He can't help it, he's addicted." But it's not true. While it is accurate to say that an addict is not responsible for whether or not they have an addiction, they are responsible for what they do with it once it has been identified. And taking that responsibility is essential to overcoming the behavior. The myth that addicts have no choice or are powerless and have no control is sometimes compounded by a lack of understanding of the 12-step groups that help so many millions of addiction sufferers. Step 1 encourages accepting powerlessness over addiction, and Step 2 recommends handing over that power to someone or something else. On the surface, this may sound like a cop-out, but the spirit of the steps is to help people reach out to others and get help and support in overcoming their addiction rather than trying to do it alone. In essence, the steps can be seen as empowering as they provide a strategy and community within which to reclaim control of one's life, rather than focusing on trying to control addiction. Before we move on, it's worth thinking a little further about the notion of moral failure. The questions around morality and sex addiction are commonplace and unique when compared with other addictions. As a society, we generally don't make anywhere near as many moral judgments about drinking too much as we do about someone who is deemed to have too much sex. We may look down our nose and worry about the binge-drinking youth, but mostly, we assume that people will get over it and develop a healthy relationship with alcohol. And we generally have more compassion for those who develop alcohol dependency. But when it comes to sex, it's quite a different matter. Sex has always been a popular topic for moralizers, not least because of the negative and limited views of most of the world's religions. And there are some psychological professionals in the U.S. who openly object to the sex addiction label because they view it as something that pathologizes what some would consider as normal and commonplace sexual behavior. What is key to understand here is that it is not the type or amount of sexual behavior that defines it as an addiction, but the dependency on it. Whatever your moral viewpoint, some people have lots of sex, some people don't. Some people believe in monogamy, some prefer open relationships. Some like lots of experimentation and sexual diversity, others are content with more familiar tastes. Sex addiction is not about sex, it's about addiction, as we will continue to explore. You can't get addicted to sex. This is another very common objection to the sex addiction term, and depending on how pedantic and scientific you want to be, there may be some truth to it. It has been widely accepted for many years that people can become addicted to chemicals such as drugs and alcohol, substances that cross the blood-brain barrier and alter the brain chemistry. What's known as behavioral or process addictions have also grown widely in acceptance, but many still struggle with the word addiction and choose instead, for example, to talk about pathological gambling or compulsive overeating. The reason for this is that there is not currently sufficient clinical evidence to prove that sex works in the brain in the same way as chemicals. We do know from brain scans that the same pathways that light up when someone uses cocaine also light up when we have sex. And there is recent evidence that the same areas of the brain are activated when porn addicts are triggered as when drug addicts are triggered. But these studies have not been replicated enough, nor has there been sufficient data collection of withdrawal symptoms and behavior escalation to convince all the authorities. It is for these reasons that sex addiction and porn addiction are not currently in what is known as the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, for which many in the U.S. is considered the final word on what is and is not a diagnosable condition. Unlike some other mental health authorities, I choose to reserve judgment on whether or not the term sex addiction is scientifically accurate, as the field of addiction is changing so fast as our ability to research and understand the human brain expands. In the field of addiction, the impact of attachment and trauma on the brain, as well as the psychological impacts, are increasingly being recognized as significant contributing factors, and our understanding of craving, satiation, tolerance, and escalation are also changing as we learn more about the neurochemistry of the brain. These findings are also affecting our understanding of compulsive overeating, which is increasingly being recognized as a type of addiction. As with sex, there are undoubtedly some people who simply overeat out of greed, but according to Frontiers in Psychiatry, food addiction is an increasing reality. The American Association for Addiction Medicine, ASAM, has adopted a new definition of addiction in line with the latest brain studies, stating that addiction is a primary chronic disease of brain reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry. The DSM has also changed its listing of addiction in the latest edition to a single category heading of addictive disorders, under which are the subheadings of alcohol use disorder, substance use disorder, and gambling disorder, with internet use disorder being listed as warranting further research. What is common to both is that the emphasis has shifted from the substance or process to the physical and psychological symptoms of addiction. While research continues to determine whether or not sex and pornography can become addictive in the same way as other substances and behaviors, perhaps what is most important is to decide whether or not the accuracy of the term addiction really matters to you or not. While the professionals decide what to call it, it undoubtedly continues to be a growing problem. For partners, the pain is probably the same whatever you call it, but the routes to overcoming it, for both you and your partner, may be very different. It is time for an example. Jenny. Jenny did not believe that sex addiction existed. She had worked for many years in a hostel for homeless men with alcohol and drug issues, and her husband did not look or behave even faintly like her wards. They were a middle-class, respectable family. Her husband had a good job as a teacher and was a good father to their two small children. 10 months ago, she found a message string on his phone from another woman, saying she was looking forward to meeting him. She questioned him immediately as she scrolled through other messages on his phone before he had a chance to snatch it back. That's when she found the pictures, as well as sexually graphic texts from a further 6 women. John crumbled and confessed to a long-standing porn problem that had recently escalated to visiting masseurs. It was 6 months later that I met them both, and having done some research, John was convinced he had a sex addiction and was desperate for help to get back on track as well as save his marriage. But Jenny said it was too late. She had accompanied him to the meeting to see if I could convince her that the condition existed. But she could not believe that an upstanding man such as John could behave like that unless he was simply a low-life fraud like her father, who had apparently abandoned her mother when she was 5. Like all of us, Jenny had her own story that influenced her response, and her choice was to blame John, not an addiction. Before we move on, there is a further issue that is often raised which causes confusion. But my partner's behavior isn't really about sex. Partners of people with compulsive pornography problems often wonder if the sex addiction label can be accurate for them. Similarly, there are an increasing number of people getting hooked on the adult hookup sites, creating and checking profiles on a regular basis, and chatting to potential partners. But they never meet. They have never actually had sex with any of them. Of course, for a partner, that is still a significant breach of trust, and hence can cause a lot of pain. But is it the same as sex addiction? As said previously, sex addiction isn't about sex. It's about addiction. There are many, many different behaviors that someone with sex addiction can engage in. For some, it's all online, such as pornography, chat rooms, webcam sex, while for others, it is also offline, such as visiting sex workers, multiple affairs, or cruising. What defines addiction is the dependency on something as a mood regulator. The exact nature of that substance or behavior is not relevant to the definition. In other words, if you are an alcoholic, it's the alcohol you become dependent on. Whether it's gin or whiskey, beer or tequila is irrelevant. Similarly, in sex addiction, it is the dopamine hit of the buzz that the person becomes dependent on, not the actual type of behavior. Tastes may develop, as they do with alcohol drinkers, and some will have their preferences, but as the addiction escalates, so does the repertoire of behaviors. For many people with sex addiction, hunting for the perfect image or video clip, or spending hours on the chase, is as big a part of the addiction as the orgasm, if indeed they have one. Sex addiction is not about fulfilling a sexual need, in the same way that chronic overeating is not about fulfilling hunger. Hence, the sexual activity is not really relevant. The evidence for sex addiction. Perhaps the biggest indicator of whether or not a condition really exists is the number of people who come forward for help. Deirdre Sanders, the agony aunt of The Sun newspaper, said, "Sex/porn, compulsion/addiction hardly existed among the hundreds of problems readers sent in to me each week at the start of the century. But now, never a day goes by without me hearing from readers troubled by their or their partner's habit, going through all the age ranges from scarcely into their teens to pensioners." Relate centers up and down the country are rapidly developing their services to addicts, partners, and couples to cope with the demand. And I am training an ever-growing number of professionals every year from a variety of therapeutic communities to help them meet the needs of their clients. Many professionals would agree that porn addiction is reaching epidemic proportions. Online peer support groups for young guys trying to give up porn have unenviable numbers, reaching into the hundreds of thousands. In addition, there are a growing number of scientists and clinical and social researchers collating data to try to determine biological, psychological, and causational facts, as well as a host of socio-political experts who are exploring the realities of sex and porn addiction in order to develop appropriate educational and preventative materials and methods. If you're asking yourself, if sex was really addictive, wouldn't we have known about it long, long ago? Or, how come we're only just hearing about this condition now? Well, the answer, at least in part, is that as we've become a more sexually liberated society, we're able to talk about the darker side more openly and also access it. But the most significant reason for the stratospheric explosion in sex and porn addiction is the internet. There is now more opportunity to be a sex addict than at any other time in history. And while there is still minimal education about the potential risks of addiction, more and more people are getting caught in the snare. Many of those who may have had a low-level problem pre-broadband have found that the advent of limitless free pornography and endless adverts for other adult services has catapulted them into severe addiction. With the advent of the smartphone and still limited success of blockers and filters, who knows where we'll be in 10 years' time? It is my sincere hope that, as a society, we will quickly accept the reality of sex addiction and work together to not just treat it, but prevent it. Is my partner a sex addict? Having established that sex addiction is a real problem, it's now time to confirm if this is what your partner is struggling with. If he or she hasn't already seen a professional for an assessment or completed any other kind of online or written self-assessment tool, then I would recommend that they answer the following questions that I use in the first stage of my assessment process. If you answer yes to 5 or more of the following questions, then you may be struggling with sex addiction and would benefit from making an appointment for a full assessment. 1. Does your sexual behavior have a negative impact on other areas of your life, such as relationships, work, finances, health, and professional status? 2. Does your sexual behavior contradict your personal values and potentially limit your goals in life? 3. Have you tried to limit your sexual behavior or stop it altogether but failed? 4. Are you more tempted to engage in sexual behavior when you're experiencing difficult feelings such as stress, anxiety, anger, depression, or sadness? 5. Are you secretive about your sexual behaviors and fearful of being discovered? 6. Do you feel dependent on your sexual behavior and struggle to feel fulfilled with any alternative? 7. Have you noticed that you need more and more stimuli or risk in order to achieve the same level of arousal and excitement? 8. Do you find yourself struggling to concentrate on other areas of your life because of thoughts and feelings about your sexual behavior? 9. Have you ever thought that there might be more you could do with your life if you weren't so driven by your sexual pursuits? 10. Do you feel as if your sexual behavior is out of your control? 11. Do you currently, or have you in the past, struggled with any other addictions, compulsive behaviors, or eating disorders, such as drug or alcohol addiction, compulsive gambling, gaming, work or exercise, or collecting? 12. Has anyone in your family currently, or in the past, struggled with any addictions, compulsive behaviors, or eating disorders, such as those listed earlier? For some people, this questionnaire is sufficient to give a pretty good idea of whether the sex addiction label fits. But if you find that your partner is perhaps borderline, or if you're still not convinced that the behaviors are compulsive rather than chosen, then the following question might help further. Is this behavior out of character for your partner? In other words, in every other area of your life and relationship together, would you normally...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?